Welcome to another episode of At the Table with Patrick Lencioni, where everything we talk about is related to organizational health and the world of work. I'm your host, Pat Lencioni, joined by a full studio of people today. We've got Tracy. Hi, Tracy.
Hello.
We've got Bo Johnson. How you doing, Bo?
Hey, Pat. Great to be here.
And we've got Cody from his couch in Utah with his broken leg. How you doing, Cody?
Couldn't be better.
That's great. Well, you could be actually, but you're doing well. You're doing well. Yeah, I've got Karen well. And Matt in studio, and we have a very important episode today, and one that we're re-recording because the first time we did it, we thought, I don't think we made it clear, so we're going to do it again. And Cody, what is the title?
Accidental DNA.
That's right. Accidental DNA. And here's what we're talking about. Companies these days in America, around the world too, but I'm certainly more familiar with corporate America, and we have listeners all around the world, which we appreciate, are unknowingly, it seems, confusing their employees, as well as their customers, about what their identity is. And it's creating division in their companies, and it's making people ask the question, do I really belong here? And that's what we want to talk about today, is what is a company's DNA, its identity, and how can companies go about being really clear about what that is and not letting accidental things redefine them and create confusion? Hmm. Make sense?
Well, that sounds really interesting. Can you give me an example, Pat, of what that means, that DNA or part of your culture would make, is some of what you're describing, that it would start to drift, or maybe that it would start to be unclear?
What your company's DNA is, we call it your core purpose and your core values. And Jim Collins talked about your core identity being, why do you exist and how do you behave? So you start a company, you say, we exist because we want to serve this market, or we want to invent a new way to do this, or we want to help our employees have better lives. And then you say, what are our core values? And you say, they are these two or three things that define what behaviors are acceptable here. And we use those values and that purpose, that DNA, if you will, to decide, how do we recruit people? Who do we want to attract? How do we hire people? Who makes it through the process? And, you know, who fits here and will be successful here? How do we reward people? Who do we hold up as role models? How do we manage people? What do we want them to focus on? And even how we market, you know, what kind of people in the market do we want to appeal to? So you have that DNA, and it is the basis for which you decide who you are. Mm-hmm. Okay. What Jim Collins says, and I agree, is that if you change that, you're essentially changing your company. You're refounding the organization. Mm-hmm. And what we're finding today is a lot of companies, either because of a social issue or a political issue du jour, and it doesn't matter what it is, we're not commenting on that, they're allowing things to seep into their DNA, and it's leaving their employees wondering, oh my gosh, is this a different company? And do I no longer belong here if I'm not into that? Mm-hmm. And that's what we want to talk about, is how companies are accidentally allowing their DNA to be changed. And I think in many cases, they're not even aware of it.
So the first step for a leader sounds like is to get really, really clear about what your values are. And maybe some of what you're describing, Pat, is that accidentally other values might have seeped in or that are different from what originally had been intended when the company was founded, or would be unrecognizable to a team. Could you just say a little bit about that? You've talked a lot about values. What's the difference between that, like a core value and an accidental value?
Yeah. So we wrote an article years ago. How long was that, Tracy? Was it? That was over 20 years ago.
It was 2002. Sorry.
2002. Yes. So goodness gracious, over 20 years ago. Yep. And we wrote this article for the Harvard Business Review, and it was about values. It was called Make Your Values Mean Something. Mm-hmm. And what we said is there's core values, the most important ones, and those are the values that really define your organization. And there should only be two or three of these, because if you have too many, it dilutes the important ones, and it makes people feel like, oh, who could possibly adhere to all of those values? Your core values are what's most important. But then there's these other values that also need to be understood. There's one called permission to play, which is like, hey, we're not even going to consider somebody who's not kind and has respect for others and things like that, honest. there's some that are called, what do we call the other ones? They are
aspirational
values. Thank you, Karen. And that's the ones we wish we had, and we're trying to work on that. But then there's these kind called accidental. And accidental values are values you need to be careful of, because they can start to seep into your culture without you realizing it. And it creates confusion about who belongs, and it can make people feel like if they should be there. Tracy, you and I have a great example of this, right? From that one of our earliest clients. Remember that?
Yeah, they were, I think, our first client. Yeah, we worked for this company, and they were this sort of a funky company in San Francisco. They made handbags. And we would go there, we would visit them regularly, and we'd walk in and there'd be club music playing, and everyone was young and everyone was wearing black, and it was just kind of a funky company. And you asked the question, Pat, when did this become part of your core?
Right, because we helped them with their values. Yes. And they had these really good values that would appeal to all of their employees. And when we pointed it out, like, so does everybody who works here have to like go to rave parties and dress like this? And they were like, oh no, that has become an accidental value that's limiting our ability to attract people. Yep. Ultimately, it's limiting our ability to appeal to even customers. And we need to go guard against that seeping in, because otherwise we are going to become something that we never intended to be.
Right. Mm-hmm. And you know, Pat, I love a phrase that you use around core values very regularly with clients, is like, what are the two or three things that we're going to be brutally intolerant of people not possessing? Like, because it's sort of counterintuitive to think that way, but when you're clarifying your culture, and I love what you said, it's like, if those start to drift, if I get hired into an organization that has absolute clarity about what their values are, they're explicit about it in the interview, I see it being lived out in the culture of their organization, and I'm there a couple of years and it starts to feel like there's this new value added to it that it wasn't ever articulated to me. You said that it leaves customers and employees to be confused about their belonging, you know, and you could call it, whether it's wearing black and listen to a certain type of music, or I've seen companies like hire people who like to go duck hunting on the weekends, you know? And it's like, do I have to duck hunt to work here? That seems to be the only activity that we do, but it does creep in there.
What we had an accidental value at the table group early on, which was everybody we hired was about our age and they all had kids. Mm-hmm. So every day we were constantly talking about kids and poopy diapers and preschool and all these other things. And we looked around one day and we said, how come there's nobody that's grandparent age here, or nobody who's not married and has kids. And we thought, oh my gosh, a core value is not you have to have young children. We have to start being more guarded about what we're allowing to seep into our culture.
You know, and what's so interesting about that example, Pat, is by the time, you know, 9 years ago when I got to the table group, you guys had changed that. You were aware that we were like, oh, we all kind of grew up together and we all have families. And my experience was, I really wanted to work at the table group. I fit humble, hungry, and smart. And there was only one other person in my age group there, you know? And it almost does repel people to a certain degree when you have not clarified, like, hey, is this like core to what you guys believe? And are you trying to find ways to not make that core? And so it is a great example, even something like age or families, that could actually repel talent because it's sending the wrong message.
And it's kind of the irony of diversity. When you know what your core is, your core purpose and your core values, you can be diverse around everything else. In fact, you ought to be, but you shouldn't be diverse around that one thing, because you're saying this is what matters.
Mm-hmm. Listening to these stories and have experienced some of that personally. And what's kind of ironic, Pat, is I think the accidental values can sometimes be the ones that are loudest. Because when you all were having little kids, that was the thing that was, you were showing each other pictures and you didn't have pictures on your phones. Then you had to like go to Kinko's and like, really cared about your kids, but it was what came up at the lunch table. Right. And for that handbag company, it's all of the things that seem like little sort of artifacts or parts of the environment that can sometimes speak louder, especially speak louder if your core values are just sort of mediocre wall art that are hanging there that aren't talked about.
Mm. Right. And the thing about, Tracy said them before we started, and that this is not benign. Yes. And I think this is not, it's easier for people to go, well, you know, people just like to do these things, especially when there's plenty of people in your organization who might not necessarily agree with that thing that seeped into the culture. And there's a cruelty in not being clear with them about whether this really is a core value or whether it's not. Because let's sprint to the end here. The point here is what a CEO has to do is decide, hey, wait a second. I think we're refounding our company around some new values and a new purpose. I need to tell everybody that we're refounding the company around this so that some people, you know, the truth will make them free. Some people can opt out and decide, oh, okay, so I probably don't fit anymore. Or the CEO needs to stand up and say, hey, this has seeped into our culture. It's not a core value. You don't need to abide by this. I'm sorry that some people felt excluded. Let's be very clear. We welcome people in all these different opinions, or whether you agree with these things or not. Just because some people here are doing something doesn't mean you should feel excluded. And the irony here also is that customers eventually start to get impacted by that too.
Yeah, and I think you're exactly right, Pat. It's that level of clarity. I mean, I think when you guys recorded this podcast the first time, that was the title, which is the truth will set them free, or can set them free. And the idea that, hey, it's actually relieving as an employee to know, oh, hey, I was kind of confused. Is this culture changing? Do I still belong? And for a CEO, a leader to stand up and say, hey, here's the two or three values that are really core. And outside of that, we have tons of diversity. But if you're not centered around these two or three, then it's going to be problematic.
Yeah, I'm thinking about a story personally for me, and I'll share that in a second. I think that when you care really, really deeply about something, you tend to be vocal about it. Right. And so it's talking about your kids. You care about your kids deeply. And so that was what you were talking about naturally. We've all had friends who are on to their next diet and they talk about it. And so there can be really deep values that a person cares about that they might be bringing to work. And this happened to me years and years ago. There's an issue my wife and I are pretty invested in and care about deeply. And I remember having a conversation with my boss about it, that I wanted them to come alongside me. I wanted them to be able to stand up and say they cared about this too, and they didn't. In fact, my boss at the time, she had kind of the clarity to be able to say, it's fine for you to be able to care about that, but us as your employer, our role is not to be your microphone for that issue. And honestly, that was a little bit hard for me, because it was like, oh no, I think everybody should care about this. I think everybody should be into this. But it's so clarifying to know their role is to provide a great job and to care about and promote the values that they cared about, not necessarily to promote mine.
Right. Now, if a company does want to do that and they have the right to do that, they just have to recognize there's consequences to that. They might lose a lot of talent and they might lose a lot of customers. What companies can't do is have their cake and eat it too, where they say, hey, we're going to take a stance on whatever issue it is, and know that there's employees that don't agree with that, and we expect them just to be quiet and to continue to work here. That puts them, that's cruelty. It puts them in a bad situation.
Yeah.
I like to use an example. I mean, I was thinking about this one day. Imagine, because I thought, what's a good example? What would be a good example study? Imagine if the CEO and the executives at a company all decided, they all watched a movie or a documentary about not eating meat, about being vegetarians. And they were all like, yeah, you know, let's do it. And so they said, we're all going to be vegetarians. And then they said, you know, we should probably stop serving meat dishes in the company cafeteria. Yeah, let's do that. And let's put posters around the office, really helping people understand the dangers of eating meat. All right. And soon enough, in meetings and in hallway conversations, everybody was talking about how bad meat is and everything else. And you have employees that are ranchers. You have employees that need a lot of protein in their diet, so they eat meat. Some just love to barbecue. The question becomes, hey, Mr. or Mrs. CEO and your team, do you want this to be something that people opt into and out of your company because of? And are you willing to let your customers know this too? Now, if the company is in the business of selling fish, or it's a diet company that believes in this, that is one thing.
Yeah.
But if you're selling shoes or software or something else, the question is, if you want to take this on as a defining issue, then have the courage to say so and deal with the consequences of that. So it's all about clarity and telling the truth.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, Pat, is the whole clarity is kind piece of this, which is if I were at that company or Matthew, who I think has eaten 33 cheeseburgers this year, who like if 42, he just gave me the real number, 42, unbelievable, that we'd have a different sign up for you, Matthew, for a different reason. But as a person who likes eating meat, if I were in that culture and there wasn't an explicit, clear, you know, message from the leadership team, I would be walking around that company with my head down going like, I guess I can't invite people to my barbecue, or I guess they might look down on me or think differently of me because I don't ascribe to the same, you know, diet that they ascribe to. And what you're saying is it would be really relieving and freeing if the CEO and leadership team stood up and said, hey, this is what we're about now. And if that doesn't fit you, that's okay. I'd be totally better off knowing that and finding a new job than spending 6-7 months of my career there kind of with my head down and not knowing what to do or say.
And you know what's interesting? I think most CEOs, kind of like we did around having little kids and that other company did around funkiness, I think most CEOs would say, hey, we don't want to put up barriers for people to work here and to feel comfortable. And they would say, whoa, maybe we let this go a bit too far. And let's reassure the people here that all thoughts about what you eat are fine. And the reason why I say that is because I heard this story recently about a big group of CEOs who got together and they were very quiet about it because they wanted to have a very honest conversation. And they were asked in this big meeting, what is your biggest challenge? And the single biggest answer, most common answer was, I don't know how to deal in this world where I feel like if I don't take a stand on something, I'm going to get trolled or somebody's going to write a nasty note to a shareholder. But I don't like the idea of taking a stand on something that's not related to my business and to my employees. And I don't know how to navigate that. Most CEOs are like, can we just focus on doing great work, serving our customers, providing a great place to work, and being respectful for one another. So as it turns out, this is not being driven from the top. It's accidental. And that's why what I want every leader to do is to say, do I want to adopt this and deal with it and the consequences, or do I want to go to my employees and say, hey, this was not meant to make you feel like you don't belong?
You alluded to a little bit, and I'd love to for any of you to speak to this a little bit more, which is, what's the hesitancy that you think a leader has to be able, if they have this kind of clarity, if they're hesitant, if they're feeling, what's another synonym for hesitant to be able to stand up and say this? What's their hesitation and what, how would you respond to it? How would you coach that leader?
Their hesitation to clarify it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In which direction?
I think clarity in either direction can be sort of risky because it means you might be excluding people.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So clarity, the hesitancy, Bo, about clarifying that, yes, this is our new value, is that you're worried that you're going to lose good talent and good customers.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Clarity around clarifying that we're open to all points of view. I think generally most employees want to work in a place where you can do that. So I don't think you're really worried about losing a lot of talent or customers because of that. You're worried about some unfair criticism from the outside and that it's going to create a bunch of unnecessary and unwanted pain from people who are taking advantage of that issue.
Mm. And I would just say, you know, people are motivated by either the reward that is out there for actually doing the thing and saying like, hey, we're going to go out and clarify our culture, or the potential pain that might exist. And I would just go back to what Tracy said, which is, this is not benign. This is actually relatively dangerous for the people that work in your organization, that if you're not willing to go out there and be clear, that it can cause people to be less fulfilled in their work, not feel like they fit, confuse your customers, confuse people internally. And as a group of people who think that the clarity of your core purpose and your culture is a primary driver of the success of your business, there's actual financial ramifications for not being clear. So whether you're inclined to say, oh, I want to do it for all the right reasons, or hey, I want to avoid the potential pain, both of those should be motivating enough.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, I would just add to that, when you as a leadership team or you as a leader don't clarify something, you push the decision down into the organization. And you say, well, we don't really want to have that conversation. That sounds uncomfortable. What you inevitably do is say, I guess my middle managers have to wrestle through that. And now you have the potential of departments, you know, not agreeing with the answer they come up with and you being out of sync as an organization.
So true. So true. And that's why, and by the way, we're not even talking about any issues. The only issue we brought up is vegetarianism, right? And so that's why the CEO has to have the courage to stand up and say, listen, everybody, you all know I'm a vegetarian if he or she is. But, you know, you don't have to be one to work here. And that's your choice. And I'm fine with everybody. Or they have to stand up and say, you know something, I feel so strongly about this. I'm willing to lose our meat-eating employees and our meat-eating customers. And either of those is okay. Either of those is okay. What's not okay is not being clear and hoping to benefit from something you want to do and not experience the downside. Because that, like you said, Bo, it falls on employees deeper in the organization. And that's all we're saying here is be clear and don't let the outside world impose values on you that you're not even aware of. Take control of that. Okay. What's our unpaid advertisement today?
Is it a barbecue sauce or meat market? No, I'm just kidding. What is it, Matt?
Now, what is it, Matt?
Veggie burger.
Definitely not veggie burger. Let's go with Diablo Barber Company. That is my barber. And they're great.
In essence, we're saying the unpaid ad is for the mullet haircut because you're rocking the mullet, right, Matt?
Yeah.
The only way this ad works is on a podcast where they can't see a video of your hair because otherwise it's an anti-marketing campaign.
Why do you love them, Matt? Why do you love them?
That's what I was just going to ask. I've heard you talk about them. I think it's sounds like a cool place.
Yeah, they're really cool. It's like not only do they give great haircuts, but every time I go in there, like even the guys that I've never gotten a haircut from, they like know my name and they'll like talk to everyone sitting in different chairs. And it just feels like you're there to like hang out.
What's their opinion on vegetables?
What's their take on vegetables? I assume it's the same as mine.
So this is like the Cheers of barbershops where you kind of go in there, they know your name, they know who you are, and they cut you. Now, would they cut your hair any other way, Matt?
No.
Yeah, because they love guy, it.
Yeah, he does what he wants with it, and which is usually mullet.
It seems worth clarifying. You said it's called Diablo. I think that's because it's on Mount Diablo Boulevard, not because it's...
Yes.
Doesn't Diablo mean devil?
Like, yeah, it's not named after the devil. That's El Diablo. Diablo around here means just like the mountain near us. So, okay, Mount Diablo or Diablo Barber. They're good guys, gals, and we want to send a shout out to them. Hey, everybody, thank you for listening to us. Bo, Cody, Tracy, Matt, Karen, and all of our listeners, we really appreciate you, and we look forward to talking to you next time on At the Table. God bless.